Welcome. I am delighted to share with you self-awareness, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual through new thought, exploring relationships, health and healing, true prosperity, and metaphysics. These topics embrace transpersonal psychology, realizing that we are more than bodies, minds, inherited tendencies, genes, conditioning, or programming. Transpersonal psychology goes beyond the persona, meaning going beyond. We are spiritual beings going through a human experience. The topics were recorded in front of a live audience at the Victoria Center for Self-Awareness, where I was the founder, then the director, for 25 years.
After the meditation, we'll have a few moments of silence to envision world healing or to particularly send our love to those in particular need of it right now. Noticing our thoughts, presencing our thoughts and consciousness to the present moment, to right now. Envision a bright light moving up your spinal column, like a spinning disc of light lighting up your back as you continue to breathe deeply, all the way up to the back of your neck, the back of your head, and the top of your head. Focusing our attention on the point between our eyebrows. Know that I speak these words for me and for you in the I person. There is one presence, one power, one God, the fullness of wisdom, creativity, and unconditional love. Being omnipresent, it expresses not only around me, but in me, through me, and as me now. This morning, right here and now, I move in consciousness before I move anything else in my life. I move to the level of God, which is really the only consciousness there is. There is one life, that life is God, and that life is my life right now. I clean out the debris I may have stored away knowingly or unknowingly within myself. Every insecure, fearful, and self-doubting, separating pattern and belief is now being released. Divine mind, divine wisdom, strength, spiritual power works deliberately and courageously for the specific purpose of uplifting, enriching, transforming, and regenerating me this very moment. I shift my consciousness from human limited awareness to unlimited God awareness, and I jubilantly celebrate. I'm thankful for this conscious realization this morning. I'm thankful for each person gathered here in spiritual community, creating the field of consciousness of this, our spiritual home. I'm thankful for my world and universe and my relationship to them. Most of all, I'm thankful for life itself, and so it is. Thank you. My topic this morning is overcoming obstacles. So I speak to a lot of people in my everyday life, and I'm realizing that many people are going through tough times right now. Last week I spoke about, oh no, now what do I do? And next week our topic will be shattered dreams, build new ones. So today I chose overcoming obstacles, three things I'd like to address this morning. for us to really observe how we are when we perceive that we're in front of an obstacle or obstacles are presenting themselves to us. And what can we learn from this? Number two, I want to give some examples. Of course, there'd be many more examples, but I'll just give a few. You look in your life when you've been up against obstacles. And number three, a very important realization about what's happening when problems persist. What's happening when problems persist? Many people block a higher perception instead of observing how we are and what we could learn from it. Many people block a higher perception because if they listen to that higher perception, that would mean that they would have to change. Maybe their lifestyle, or maybe who they're with, or maybe their work, or how they are with people, like that. It's been said that we're something like tea bags. We really don't know our strength until we're put into hot water. No? Every time I put a tea bag in my teapot, I think about that. Helen Keller said this, "The richness of the human experience would lose something of rewarding joy if there were no limitations to overcome." If there were no limitations to overcome. One who gains strength by overcoming obstacles possesses the strength to really overcome adversity in their life. And I think we've probably all had some of that at one time or other in our lives. Sometimes when obstacles appear, fear surfaces, fear associated with maybe in particular failure, that things won't work out. It's been said that if one never is scared or embarrassed or hurt, it means you never take chances. But failure is only the opportunity to begin anew. I don't like to say begin again because you don't want to repeat that. It's to begin anew. And this time, hopefully more wisely and with greater spiritual strength that you're in touch with. It's not what happens to us in life, it's how we are with it. It's what we do with it. Last week I spoke about, oh no, now what do I do? And if you remember, if you were here, and those of you who weren't, I asked you to take apart that title. Oh no, that's denial. Now, do we really presence ourselves in the now? Right now, instead of what's going to happen in the future? Or why didn't this happen instead? And now what do I do? Not so much what we do, and that certainly comes later, but how are we going to be with it? How are we being right now? And then coming to conscious choice about what we do. And then I also asked you to really remember to use the law of relativity and the triangular aspect of knowledge, which I present many times here at the center because it's so important, and then for us to be sculptors in our life. You know, Michelangelo, when he was doing the statue of David, he said that he just chipped away everything that was not David. And David appeared. Yeah. Okay. Now, sometimes when obstacles appear and when we've gone through some difficult times, we recount and keep speaking about it, especially the personal dramas in our life. I like what Alan Cohen had to say in one of his books, Dare to Live, I believe it was. He said, recounting a personal drama more than two or three times and not feeling a sense of movement in your sharing, it's like a little rap alarm goes off in our brain. It has more, like, we need to ask this question, do I have more of an investment in the drama or more of an investment in the healing of whatever's happening, in the moving through the obstacle? Do I want the spotlight or the light? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when people come to me for counseling, now if I feel that they need more than one or two sessions and need it on an ongoing basis, I have a few people that I refer people to. But I also say to people, and I don't want to appear insensitive, but I will only listen to your story once. and then we'll go from there, okay? That usually shapes them up quite a bit. It's like, let go of the BS. And it's not what you think, it's called basic story. Your basic story that you keep saying and saying and saying and saying and repeating and repeating and repeating. I said in the meditation, to clean out debris, whether it's consciously or unconsciously stored. That's why it's very important to also, you know, it's important to be here in spiritual community on Sundays and to come together with like-minded people in a celebration and to hopefully learn something from the topic. But it's really important to take classes and workshops. The basic principles that we study and present are profound, and it's necessary to embody them, and the Sunday service is where we hear about them and hear about the potential that lies within us. But the classroom, the workshop setting, is where we experience practical application. I always remember John Bradshaw, we had him here several times a number of years ago, and he said something like, the healing really occurs in group and group work. So keep that in mind whenever you come up against hearing about a workshop, and if it speaks to your heart, check it out. If you want to just check out Love at the Core, come to number one. You can come to number one, and then you can decide whether you want to continue on. And those of you who have taken it again, I welcome reviewers. The reviewers really make a difference in that course. We will not be having that course unless we have 10 registered. So we have a sheet at the back. Bill Cosby said this, I don't know what the key to success is, but the key to failure is trying to please everyone. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful colleague minister that I wrote to when I was going through a dark night of the soul myself and with the center, and I wrote her, and she sent me a wonderful card, and in the card it said this, she who whittles and trims herself to suit everyone soon whittles themselves away. I think we can all go like this a little bit to that one. So the question is, are we willing to relinquish all ways that we treat ourselves unlovingly? Unlovingly. Are we very conscious of our self-talk? Overcoming obstacles can make a huge difference if we really listen to what we say to ourselves. And is it empowering? Does it build our self-esteem? I love a lot of the words that you sang this morning, Amy. They were great, especially in alignment with this topic. Thank you. Dwelling on the past. If only things had been different, if only they had done something differently. Dwelling on the past or worrying about the future. You know, every Sunday I begin the meditation the same way, presencing ourselves to right now. And that's a powerful principle, whether we're going to be experiencing meditation as a group or individually or in everyday life. How much of our life do we live in, regretting things or being fearful of something that might happen, something that might happen? It's about being willing to release any hindrances in our relationships, in our health and healing, and in our finances also. Remove any clutter in our life, physically, mentally, and emotionally. Yeah. Okay, many of us have heard the biblical quotation, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. By the renewing of your mind means, you know, don't go there in that those old thoughts again. The renewing of your mind. Many times I've spoken here and in other places about matter obeys the intent of consciousness. matter obeys the intent of consciousness. That is not a woo-woo statement. Quantum physics has proven it. We could say it another way, where our attention goes, energy flows, and results show. Always remembering that we're dealing with energy, we are energy, our thoughts are energy, our emotions are energy, and our actions are energy, and we're immersed in that energy. The law of attraction and the law of repulsion is always at work. So we're attracting and repulsing according to our consciousness, what we're entertaining in our minds. I love Terry Cole Whitaker, who was a wonderful New Thought minister. I don't know what she's doing now, but she had a great ministry in San Diego years ago. And she wrote several books, and one book in particular, I especially like the title. I like the book, but I especially like the title. What you think of me is none of my business. What you think of me is none of my business. Here's the thing. The worst that anybody can say about you contains some truth about them. Now, the truth is opposite, is also true. The worst that you say about somebody, there's something in there about you too. Otherwise, you couldn't acknowledge it. You couldn't recognize it if it wasn't part of your own consciousness. I'm not saying that you express it maybe as much as this other person, but it's in there. What we dislike in other people, we strongly dislike within ourselves. I know some of this is a little difficult to hear and look at in our life. But criticism is like projecting guilt so that the person that's projecting the criticism can feel innocent. Okay? So our success in life is directly in ratio to how we deal with criticism. So how do you deal with criticism? That's a good question to ask yourself. All right. I need to find some of my examples here that I have. Just a few of them. These are a little bit older examples, but they're still meaningful. After Fred Astaire, who was a wonderful screen star and dancer, his first screen test at MGM, they said, "You can't act, you're slightly bald, and you can only dance a little." Huh? Beethoven's teacher called him hopeless as a composer. Famous opera singer Enrico Caruso's teacher said he had no voice at all and could not sing. Walt Disney was fired by a newspaper editor for lack of ideas. Good thing he was fired from there, eh? He also went bankrupt several times before building Disneyland. Albert Einstein couldn't speak until he was 4 years old and didn't read until he was seven, and teachers described him as mentally slow, unsociable, and adrift forever in his foolish dreams. Leo Tolstoy, the author of War and Peace, he flunked out of college. He was described as both unable and unwilling to learn. 18 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull before Macmillan Publishers published it in the 70s. 18. Wonder how many of us would give up after one or two rejections. I like this one. In 1959, Universal Pictures executive dismissed Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds at the same meeting. "Burt," they said, "you have no talent. Clint, you have a chip on your tooth and an Adam's apple that sticks out too far, and you talk too slow." All right. I want to tell you a story about it, somebody that you all know, but you won't know who he is until the end. Years ago, a hardworking man took his family from New York State to Australia to take advantage of a working opportunity there, and part of this man's family was a handsome young son who had aspirations of joining the circus as a trapeze artist or an actor. this young fellow, biding his time until a circus job or even one as a stagehand came along, worked at a local shipyard which bordered on the worst section of town. Walking home from work one evening, this young man was attacked by 5 thugs who wanted to rob him. Instead of just giving up his money, the young fellow resisted. However, they overcame him and beat him to a pulp. They mashed his face with his boots and kicked and beat his body brutally with clubs, leaving him for dead. When the police happened to find him lying on the road, they assumed he was dead and called for the morgue wagon. On the way to the morgue, a policeman heard him gasp for air, and they immediately took him to emergency unit, to the emergency unit of the hospital. When he was placed on a gurney, a nurse remarked to her horror that this young man no longer had a face. Each eye socket was smashed, his skull, legs, and arms were fractured, his nose literally hanging from his face, all his teeth were gone, and his jaw was almost completely torn from his skull. Although his life was spared, he spent several years in the hospital. When he finally left, his body may have healed, but his face was disfigured to look at. He was no longer the handsome youth that everybody had admired. When he started to look for work again, he was turned down by everyone because of the way he looked. One potential employer suggested to him that he join a freak show at the circus, being the man who had no face. And he did this for a while. He was still rejected by everyone, and no one wanted to be seen with him. He thought of suicide, and this went on for 5 years. One day he passed a church and sought solace there, and entering the church he encountered a priest who saw him sobbing while he was kneeling in the pew. The priest took pity on him and took him to the rectory, where they talked at length, and the priest was impressed with him to such a degree that he said he would do everything possible for him that can be done to restore his dignity and his life. And the young man promised to be the best Catholic he could be and trust in God's mercy to free him from this torturous life. The young man went to Mass and communion every day, and after thanking God for saving his life, asking God to only give him peace of mind and the grace to be the best man he could ever be in God's eyes. The priest, through his personal contacts, was able to secure the services of the best plastic surgeon in Australia. There would be no cost to the young man, as the doctor was the priest's best friend, and the doctor too was very impressed with this young man, whose outlook now on life, even though he had experienced the worst, was filled with good humor and love. The surgery was miraculously successful. All the best dental work was also done on him, and the man became everything he promised God he would be. He was also blessed with a wonderful, beautiful wife, children, and success in an industry which would have been the farthest thing from his mind as a career if it had not been the goodness of God and the love of people who cared for him. This he acknowledges publicly. This young man was and is Mel Gibson. I sure didn't know that about him. His life was the inspiration for his production of the movie, The Man Without a Face, and I have seen that movie. It's a very good movie. He's to be admired for us all for, you know, the stand that he took and his political conservation, and an example to the true meaning of courage. So do you think he had a few obstacles? It's like, what's our problem? Using the law of relativity, like last week, you know, always comparing ourselves to something or the situation to something worse. I said earlier, it's important for us to realize something about if problems persist. Our persistent problems are the company that we keep to fulfill the void of not having a purpose and vision in our life. The persistent problems are the company that we keep to fulfill the void of us not having a vision or purpose in our lives. Now, on a more serious note, I was reading about a heart surgeon's. There's a medical term called, I'm going to try to pronounce this properly, op-op-tosis. I'd never heard of that before. When the mind believes it has outgrown usefulness in life, such as when some people retire, sometimes when experiencing an empty nest, or the person has stopped dreaming, the brain sends a message that the body is no longer needed. Then they begin to mentally and physically self-destruct. That's apoptosis. So, obstacles are those frightening things. I think Henry Ford said this. Obstacles are those frightening things that we see when we take our mind, when we take our eyes off the goal. Some obstacles present themselves to us as emergencies, and in that case we dial 911. Well, you know, the 911, oh please God, help me out of this. You know, and that's sometimes the only time we go into that consciousness instead of, I don't like to use the term calling on God, because God is always there, that infinite presence and power, universal life force, intelligence, energy, creativity, divine love, whatever you want to call it. It's always present. It's not beside us. We're immersed in it. So it's consciously connecting to that. Consciously connecting to that on a daily basis. And you know, it doesn't have to look like sitting down and meditating for 10 or 15 minutes, and it could. But it's like, you know, you could be stirring soup on the stove and having a conscious connection that way. You know, like, it look for ways and places and times to do that. So what would our lives be like if we really partnered that way in consciousness? What would my life be like if I really partnered that way in a deeper way? What would your life be like if you really were like that, presenced yourself often every day that way? One of my profound spiritual mentors is Roy Eugene Davis, who runs the Center for Spiritual Awareness outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and I was actually ordained into ministry through that center in 1984. He said this, a way to remove all obstacles to spiritual growth, whether physical, mental, or emotional, is to live with conscious intention with meaningful purpose. To live with conscious intention with meaningful purpose. I heard somebody define what being conscious is. And I like this definition. The choice to become personally aware of where your spirit goes, and a refusal to allow your spirit to be used in any way without your awareness or your permission. That's Carolyn Meese who said that. She's author of many wonderful books, Anatomy of Healing, etc. Anatomy of an Illness, I think it was.
Anatomy, yes.
She's written several of them. The choice to become personally aware of where our spirit goes. So it's not like our spirit goes out of us, but it's, I think what she's saying is, where our consciousness, what are we focusing on? Where is our focus right now? So all of us have gone through winds and waves in our life. It's about working on building our consciousness. It's been said that environment is stronger than will. So, what is our environment like? I'd like you to look at your car. I'm not talking about the kind of car you drive, whether it's, you know, high performance or beautiful, but how do you keep your car? That's an environment that you place yourself into. And I don't know how much time you spend in your car. When I was a realtor, I spent a lot of time in my car way back in the 70s, before you could look through houses and virtual internet now. What about your home, when you go into your home? That's your environment. Environment is stronger than your willpower. Does your environment support you? In our dining room, we have a really, I don't know the name of the painting, but it's like this, and it's an elderly gentleman, and he's got his head bowed,
and he's got white hair and a white beard like this, and he's praying over a loaf of bread. And some people might say, well, that's kind of a scarcity picture. No, that picture, it's like, what does it remind you of? When I look at that picture, it reminds me to be grateful. Mm-hmm. To be grateful. Yeah. What kind of paintings do you have hung in your home? Do they remind you of aliveness, of joy, of beauty, of places you've been or places you'd like to go? Oh, I was, please don't be offended by this, but I'm going to tell you the story anyway. When I was in real estate, I went to list a home, and in the kitchen it said, fuck housework. And I said, you need to take that down. I will not show your home with something like that. So, you know, it's like that. I mean, sure, somebody might look at that and laugh, but I think that word desecrates something very wonderful in human relationships. What are the five people that you spend most of your time with? You may not think of them right now, even one or two. Who are they? Do they emulate the kind of life that you desire? I say to my friends, I'm very, very selective about who I spend my free time with, my off time. And sometimes when our place of work, we are placed in environments with some people that we rather not spend that much time with. That's a little bit different. But do we seek out and do we spend a lot of time with people that when we come away from them, we kind of feel down, or we don't feel as alive as when we first, you know, met them? Now, I'm not saying that it isn't a good thing to meet with people, especially when they are down, for you to be the person to empower them and to give them some hope. But I'm talking about you now. Who do you spend a lot of your time with? One of the fellows that has led workshops that have been 50, 80,000 people worldwide through, this was even before the internet, Jim Rohn, I highly respect him, and I took a workshop from him years ago in Vancouver. And he's a multi-millionaire, fabulous speaker, and he said this, our personal philosophy is the greatest determining factor in how your life works out. So, in the final moments, it's like I'm asking a question, what is your personal philosophy? Is it a personal philosophy that empowers you to overcome obstacles? Is it a personal philosophy that keeps you out of, oh my God, now what? You know? Is it a personal philosophy that enables you to get in touch with who you really are as a spiritual being, going through a human incarnation, yes, and there's going to be like this, but that you're able. Imagine, you know, like just imagine what our lives would be like if we absolutely were emanating vibrant health and vitality, if we released anything toxic in our system, in our thinking, in our relationships, and maybe even toxic relationships. How would our life be if we were really free of personal clutter and, you know, mental clutter that clutters up our mind and doesn't speak to who we really are? If we were absolutely free of worry, if we were absolutely free of worry. So I want to close with a quote from Stuart Emery, who is another author from a long time ago. I think he's still alive. And I've used this before. It's remarkable how much mediocrity we live with, surrounding ourselves with daily reminders that the average is acceptable. Our world suffers from terminal normality. The first step to mastery is the removal of everything in your environment that represents mediocrity. Removing those things that are limiting. One way is to surround yourself with people and friends who ask more of you than you do. So I hope one of those five people that you have in your life asks more of you than you do. And I'm not talking about taking advantage of you. I'm talking about that holds you high, holds you highly, and reminds you that you're able to move through any obstacle. Even if you said something like, and I had occasion to have lunch with someone who was going through some challenges personally in their lives, and I said, what I'm going to hold for you is that you're going to come to me or to the center sometime and tell me the exact opposite to what these kinds of obstacles that are happening right now. That this thing has been resolved and that you have attracted this person in your business and like that. I'm going to hold that for you. You know, so even if we said something like that, the person walks away knowing that one person, at least one other person, is holding something possible for them. Something possible for them. And then they're more able and probably more willing to hold that possibility for themselves. So here's my question. Are you willing to be that kind of a person for other people? Hello, are you willing to be that kind of person for other people? Good, okay. I know you were saying kind of, yeah. But you know, you say a declaration like that out loud in front of other like-minded people. There's power in that. I am too. So I'm glad that you've presenced yourself this morning. God, presence and power within me acknowledges and salutes God's presence and power in each and every one of you. So I say namaste. That's what that means, namaste. Thank you. Thank you. All right.